Welcome to the last talk in HS1 for today. Vadim Katsulkin from IP Labs will talk a bit about writing less code with serverless on AWS. Give a warm round of applause. What I would normally say, but since we are online, it doesn't work. So let's just get started. Enjoy.
So thank you very much. I hope you can hear me. Welcome to my talk, Writing Less Code with Serverless on AWS. Yeah, thank you for joining me. It's the last talk, so I know it's a bit late, so you're probably tired and the weather is good, just in Bonn region. So first of all, we had a bit of trouble when I share my screen with PowerPoint, so we just found a way to convert this to PDF and then upload. So I lost all my animation, so we will see how to get this right, so you will see the whole screen at once, but I think we will get it. So several words about me. My name is Vadim, and I'm working for IP Labs at Bonn, so it's kind of regional conference for me, but we are doing this online for the second year. I have two fields of interest, Java and serverless, and that's why I give a talks to one or other topics. This is the sixth talk in the row at FrostCon for me. IP Labs is the company which resides in Bonn. We are also the sponsor of this conference also this year. And if you would like, you can drop me an email or follow me on Twitter or LinkedIn. Just if you have any questions which we can clarify during this talk, so please drop me a message and we can talk about this. As I told you, I work for IP Labs, and what we are doing, we create software for designing and purchasing of the photo products like calendars, photo books. So just you can print your emotions in form of pictures, and we offer this in all possible devices. And we are 100% subsidiary of the Fujifilm Europe. So we will be talking about serverless, especially in AWS context. So the people who are just doing serverless with Azure or cloud or on Kubernetes will see some common things. As I have experience with AWS, there are some things which are tied to how this cloud provider is doing the things. So this is our agenda for today. We will briefly talk about challenges of the software development in general, just without touching serverless, and then we will see the serverless, its value proposition. We will dive in several aspects much deeper, like own less, build more, or lower technical debt. And then we will provide just the example of serverless architectures just to minimize the code being written. And in the end, if we have time, we will be talking about how to be successful with serverless in general. So let's start the talk. And the first part is just let's briefly talk about the challenges of the software development in general first. It was too quick. I really recommend this book, Team Topologies, by Matthew Skelton and Manuel Pass. And if we are talking about server, programming, we are sometimes talking about cognitive load. This is just the total amount of mental effort being used in the working memory. And we differentiate between three of them, like intrinsic cognitive load, extraneous, and germane. And the first one is intrinsic. This is how to write just program this Java class or use a simple framework like Spring, or you write very simple tests. And when talking about extraneous, the things become much more complicated. It's just about how to write automatic tests, like integration end-to-end, and depending on the platform, also web, mobile, and desktop tests, how to build, package, deploy, and run our applications, how to configure monitoring alerts or the whole observability stuff, but also auto-scaling and so on. How to operate and maintain infrastructure, we are talking generally, so just without it, you can use cloud, which helps, or even do it on yourself. How to build fault-tolerant and systems and build resiliency in, and how to make hardware network and applications secure. So you see there are a lot of topics just in the bottom. If you're just doing microservices or something like this, distributed system, you see a lot of stuff you have to take care of. And this is just, general stuff. And I see a lot of companies who get stuck and just don't come to delivering some kind of business value, because it's just, you have to take care of this. And the last type of cognitive load is germane cognitive load. It's about your domain knowledge. So what is your company doing? So our main job at Epilabs is provide you the editor, so just that you can build your products like prints, like calendars, like photo books, like greeting cards and so on. This is our business area, and not kind of e-commerce stuff like purchasing and so on. And of course, we have to deeply understand our processes for our domains and our workflows, and be really productive in this. So what's our goal? Intrinsic? We have to become fluent. We have to become expert in writing the code and the programming languages being used. In the case of extraneous, all the stuff for building, for running microservices, in general, we have to minimize the amount what we are doing on our own. And the same is for germane. So just figure out what is your core domain, what is your competitive advantage, and probably other domains like CMS, like e-commerce, like checkout, payment, and so on. That is probably some kind of generic stuff that you can buy, and just don't focus on this. We will talk about what does it mean then if you do it other ways. So generally, what our managers want from us, that we are productive. And if we are talking about productivity, generally, this the very simple definition, we are productive if we really products, which are successfully used by our customers. But the question is, what is holding us back from being productive? So I have a lot of references below, and I will share my presentation. So you can look at this deeply. So there is a report which is probably 3 years old about the things which is holding us from being productive. And you see the huge amount of percentage, 19% is just technical debt. And if you look in the Wikipedia, then they describe technical debt. Some decision which we know that it's not very, very good decision today, that we have to correct in the future. But generally, from my perspective, it's not the best definition, because even the perfect solution today can entail debt over time. And we know this. You can choose the hottest, the newest version of the programming language, and then it will be updated, and it will the new versions will have not backward compatible changes and so on. And we have also security considerations that just will prevent us from doing things if we don't update, and we do meet perfect decisions like TLS 1.0 and so on. It wasn't available in the older versions of programming languages and so on. We also rely on open source projects. It's the conference for this, and some project will be discontinued with time, and just then you can get stuck. You have to just iterate. You have then to select other solutions. So just everything evolves with time, and even the perfect decision today will become a technical debt tomorrow. And so for me, it's technical debt is, you have to think about what happens with your software over the entire life cycle of your product. And it could be even forever. If you don't discontinue, just that's never any story. So for me, technical debt is related to amount of code written from our side, and of course also amount of dependencies used. So everything that we use via Maven, via NPM, it's just something which belongs to our software, And this is only open source project that it can also be databases in some certain versions like Postgres and also web application servers like Tomcat, which we use in some certain versions that bring some dependencies which belong to the standard which this web application server supports. So another point which also prevents us from being productive is just that we use legacy systems. And for me, legacy system is the system that cannot evolve. So we get stuck by something like we cannot update, and or it requires a very huge amount of time to update. Many people know this. Yeah, if somebody uses Java 5 or something like this, and just, yeah, you cannot upgrade it very easily. Even with Java 8, it's currently a problem. And there is another book which I can recommend, it's probably 3 years or 4 years old, Evolutionary Architectures, and they are talking about just how to write software that can be changed, that can be maintained, and but just the availability instead of maintainability, but they can be similarly understood. So this is the architecture which supports incremental change, also supports appropriate architectural coupling, and we'll be talking about why coupling is important. And it just, you also need kind of fitness functions in order to check that if you iterate, then nothing breaks. And under the fitness function, you can understand source code metrics like measuring cyclomatic complexity, all kind of tests like unit tests, percentage of coverage, but of course also performance metrics, also security in context of cloud, also encryption and so on, and all kind of CI/CD tools which can automate things and make just things reproducible, and just use quickly get the feedback if something works or doesn't work. Yeah, this is kind of example of fitness functions. Yeah? And many of them you know, so Sonar, ArcUnit, all kinds of CI/CD tools like Jenkins or managed from AWS. It doesn't matter. These all tools that we use just to get the feedback from the system that the incremental change didn't break something. So now we talk generally about the things. So let's talk about serverless. Why? And may the serverless help, and what's just value position of serverless? And we will be talking also about the total cost of ownership. So now we'll be losing all, oh, I see currently networks. So if we are talking about serverless, the full total cost of ownership, it begins with no infrastructure and operation and maintenance. And the question you should ask yourself is infrastructure, maintenance, and operation your core competency? And probably the answer will be no, unless you are working for the data center provider or the cloud provider itself. Yeah, this is their core competency. Probably your core competency is to build your product. So also auto-scaling and fault tolerance built in. And just this is also, if you see why we are not producing, this is because we are shipping, yeah, so see loses from software failures. It may be simple bugs, but it's also maybe something that just in the Christmas season the software broke. Yeah, and there are a lot of reasons for this. And one thing, can you get capacity planning and auto scaling right, depending on your situation? If you have some huge things like Black Friday and so on, just it becomes hugely difficult to do in the data center because of this whole capacity planning, racks, purchasing of hardware. It's simply in our age very, very difficult. And also, do you want to solve the hard problem of fault tolerance by yourself? So just all this stuff like active passive stuff, it's hugely complex, and it may cost you simple money, and you have to guess and so on. So there the cloud helps you a lot, and also the serverless, because just in the case of AWS, it's just the services are in three different data centers, so-called availability zones and so on. Of course it costs you money, but then just you don't have to solve all these problems, and everything fails all the time, as you know. So this is one of the main aspects we will be talking about: own less, build more stuff. And yeah, this is, yeah, if you're using serverless, doesn't matter what provider you use. This is, you rely heavily on managed services. So the whole operational stuff will be managed for you. It then becomes easier to implement new ideas because you mainly focus on the business logic, and you can do simply more with the same amount of people relying on AWS services, and also on pay-as-you-go models. So just if you just starting to implement the idea, it will cost you some pennies. So that's just not expensive if you don't do many users. Of course, if you rely on the managed services, just you can easily or much more easily evolve your architecture, because it just doesn't contain too much code from your side. And the cloud provider takes off improving their own managed services. And then we will also be talking about that serverless gives you as a consequence of owning less. It's just lower technical debt. And I think I'm going back. And this is the quote of Paul Johnston, who is very known person in the serverless space. Work what you write today, it will be your tomorrow technical debt. So you have to take care of your own code, and also less code that you write or own also means lower technical debt, and all this also means lower maintenance. And you probably know how easy it's to get stuck in maintenance mode, simply updating your dependencies, freeing this from all the security vulnerabilities and all this stuff, all this regular lore things like Omnibus and cookie consent and everything that you know. So if you own too much domains, instead of using managed services like e-commerce managed service, then it may impact you depending on the situation. And I think about the software, just like the software about the whole life cycle, is just writing the solution is one thing, maintaining the solution over the whole life cycle, it's much more expensive. So probably you will spend 75% time maintaining solution, even more, and only 25% just to write it. So if you free your time just by using all this managed service, just on your core domain, and then you can focus on business value and innovation. And probably this is something that every organization wants, and every manager, every executive cries, just, I would like to focus on innovation, on producing new things. And by this you can get faster time to market. And I think that's the differentiator into business, if you just can focus on this. And this is something that serverless enables you. But you of course have to think about just what's your core domain. We mentioned this. So this was the value proposition of serverless in generally, but we won't dive in some other stuff. Like, so our goal is just to cover own less, build more stuff, and also lower technical debt stuff. So just how to do the stuff that we just, how to rely on your cloud provider. In this case, it's AWS, just to focus on these two aspects. And if we are talking about serverless at AWS, I think about this as an operational construct. So AWS offers a lot of services which are completely not serverless or partially serverless, depending on the configuration, and everything on the right corner, they are quite purely serverless services. And this is what I mean if I'm talking about serverless, about S3, DynamoDB, Lambda, SQS, SNS, and so on. So I hope people are familiar with, it's not the introduction talk about the serverless. So I hope you have basic understanding of the server, of some of the services. So now we will just dive deeper how to write less code with AWS serverless services. And the first thing is most important, just write fewer Lambda function. Lambda function is serverless execution environment of the programming language which AWS supports, and mainly where you write your business logic. And you will see how just to write less of them. And one of the things is just use that service integration, direct service integrations which AWS provide. We will see a lot of examples with API gateway, with step function, with other stuff, with event breach. So you can skip writing your code if you simply pass your parameters to another service, just only transform the data and not transform them. And in case you write less Lambda function, it means also you have to write less code, also to test less code and to maintain less code. If you write Lambda function, you write it less, then it's also you reduce your CI/CD stack to maintain. Just also very important, you reduce the infrastructure code to maintain, because you just have to provide your IAM policies, all this permission stuff. Just you can minimize also this. You know the problems of cold start. Just by writing a less Lambda function, you just minimize all these headaches. And also point of failures, retry, security concerns, all these Lambda limits. You know, there are limits like how many concurrent Lambda execution in total do you have per account, per region. And also, of course, the spending on Lambda, on all this observability stuff of Lambda will be reduced heavily. So if you can reduce the amount of Lambda function written, do this, we will see the architectures which enable this. And another stuff is also just write less infrastructure as a code. There are frameworks we will see, AWS Amplify, serverless framework components, and so on, that allow you just also to generate a lot of stuff or just to rely on the framework to do the job you. So they will go for different architectures, and there will be very brief overview. You will see a lot of links below. Just you can dive deeper depending on your use case. As you see, we'll touch upon nearly all services which are which will be used in the context of the serverless. So the first thing, if you have some kind of API gateway, and probably if you have the application which is open to outside of the world, you will use API gateway managed service to do like this. And if you just want to call call another service, you don't need the Lambda in between. API gateway enables integration with, I think, even 100 services, something like this, direct integrations without writing the code which calls another service. So this is what you have to think about. So one use case is, it's also from IP Labs, we are relying heavily on AWS and on serverless. Simply nearly everything that we implement or start implementing, we try to be as serverless as possible. So we are thinking, can we use all these managed services, serverless services, or not? And this is one of the examples. We have our products, we have our product groups, and what we need is kind of ID generation, which is unique across all our systems, like product IDs, like product group IDs. And this is something which we have implemented by simply direct integration from API gateway and DynamoDB. This is the database we use for generating the sequence. And we have done this by simply just integrating them directly and simply letting, writing the template, velocity template, which simply asks Dynamo to get the next value of the ID. And it's quite handy. We could do this with Lambda, but just with all these disadvantages that I have mentioned. So there are a lot of integrations from API gateway to SQS. I think nearly every AWS service is just supported, so you can skip the Lambda if you just don't do some fancy stuff there. So also HTTP API, it is kind of alternative, lightweight alternative for API gateway. There is also storage first service integration. There are a lot of services that is supported, like Event Bridge, like Kinesis, like SQS step functions, and so on. So just if you would like to connect the HTTP API, the storage, then you have these options. Now we will be talking about Event Bridge, which allows us to use event bus to decouple consumer and producer. And the same thing here, if you just want to drop event, just and then you need some of this which processes is, there are a lot of direct integrations. The whole list is also very huge. Even Event Bridge is only available since 2 years, I think. if you use put targets, so just to put event, there are a lot of consumers. You see also API gateway, you will see SQS, SNS, so all the serverless services can be used as a part of the put target. But what is really nice with the event bridge, you can use API destination. You see this just to integrate it via REST with also the source side of AWS. And so you see the list of the services. You can use PagerDuty in case you you use this for incident management. You have the Slack, you have Zendesk. Nearly every service which supports this integration can be integrated with API, with event, which is newly introduced API destination. So quite handy. And we also use this with the PagerDuty. So another aspect of writing less code is just, there is a fan out pattern in case you drop the event and then you have a lot of, a lot of consumers, which would like to do something with the event, but of course not every consumer is interested in all type of events. And then you can use this field in routing mechanism, like to say, okay, I have the payload which consists of source attribute, and I can apply the rule and say, okay, I have some producers which are only interested in the event. In this event, if the source is in this case Castor and my app, so and other consumers won't receive this. So also very handy. Just you can write the Lambda function which checks something and then delegates and so on. This is the features which is natively available also on the event bridge side itself. The same is true for notification service, SNS. You also do filtering based on the message attributes. So you can use SNS service, and in case that you send notification and you have event type defined, like order canceled, order placed, and so on, you can define different producers depending on the attribute name and value, key value. So you can, in case, you see in case of event canceled or event placed, you can, then you have the consumer SQS or the queue, which then delivers the message to the Lambda. And in case of event type page visiting, you have consumer, which is directly the Lambda function. And then you are doing things differently. So also very, very powerful pattern, similar to the event bridge. So talking about other architecture, step function is one of the services which also heavily used in the serverless space. It's just you can do workflows and so on with this, and there are also very many services which can be called from the step function directly. EABridge is one of the latest thing that is introduced. They can just call the put the event into the message bus from the step functions. So also a lot of powerful patterns just to skip the business logic written in Lambda. All that I'm probably too quick because it's just a lot to cover. But what's interesting and what has been released, I think 2 months ago, in order to be productive with the step functions, you need this DSL, how to write all this, step function, how just to write, what service, all this workflow management and so on, and just requires a huge cognitive load to understand this. And that's why the team of AWS released Workflow Studio. It's just for low code visual tool for building the state machines and workflows. And you can simply just drag and drop your stuff, and you get visual hints how to do the stuff. It just greatly reduce what you need to know about this this domain's language to write the things. So try it out just to build the state machines and just see a code will be generated for you. And another example is in case you need to write Lambda for your business logic, what is really happening that you have the same pattern. So in case your Lambda has been executed successfully, probably you need kind of, you need some kind of Lambda or notification service, but especially in case the Lambda failed, probably you need kind of message, yeah, dead letter queue or even using event breach. And just the same logic, you are just doing this if else, if successful, do something, if not successful, something else. And just in order just to get rid of this and make this configurable, there is Lambda destination feature where you can simply, by defining Lambda, you can visually write the CloudFormation or some other infrastructure as a code and defined on the, yeah, via GUI or something like this, what is the logic, what should be called, and just don't include this into the into your code. Another example is DynamoDB serverless database, so which is heavily used in context of the serverless applications. The problem with this is just the difficulty with the single table design. So it's also hugely different to the people who are used to use the relational databases, how to deal with NoSQL stuff, and so on. Also for this, the NoSQL workbench is created, which helps you to model the data, visualize it, and also an operational build. So just try your queries out and so on. So it makes probably easy just for you to figure out just this is something for you or not. I think this tool is on the earlier stage because sometimes what you need, you just bring your, yeah, relational dependencies. You describe this like one to n, one to one, many to many dependencies. And yeah, sometimes you require suggestions from the tool how I can use single table design for this in the NoSQL area. I think that this tool is not quite far, but it's probably the goal just to enhance this tool that you can start by thinking in relational mode, and then it will build this quite complex single table designs, but they are quite effective and even quite cost effective in the serverless space. Also, another stuff, it wasn't easy just to export some DynamoDB into the S3. So just to export the content into the storage, you can start EMR jobs, data pipelines, or even use DynamoDB streams to write your business logic to do the stuff. Currently, this native integration, they use simple figure, doing exactly this. So simply select several things and then you can export the content of your DynamoDB table to S3. I also see a lot of potential even to improve this, because sometimes you don't need the whole contents. You would like to shrink this depending on yeah, what things do you need to there. And if you have everything in one table, probably you have different relationship there. You would like to shrink to just exporting some stuff. So there's also the room for improvement, but also one of newly introduced features. So another example is also, we have been talking about SNS, very great Kinesis data, data firehose. Among others, you see here a lot of other stuff like SQS integration with SNS, also Lambda integration and so on. But you see the newly introduced Kinesis data warehouse, firehouse configuration, which itself enables natively integration with all type of storage, like S3, like Redshift and so on, Elasticsearch. So you can use this for analytics and other stuff, because this is the path which you can explore in case you just then uses Athena or S3 or something like this. So also enables you just natively integrating without writing too many business logic and so on. Probably we will wrap up this part. just by mentioning that there is Amplify tool, which helps you to write, to write your apps using web frameworks like, JavaScript, React, Angular, Vue, Next.js, but also by generating the code for mobile platforms, Android, iOS, also using technologies which provides you hybrid approaches like Flutter, and so on. So native and hybrid approach. And this also heavily relies on managed services. So just you provide your model and many integrations will be generated for you with scaffolding and so on, which we are probably familiar with. So very, very powerful tool. And also last year, the admin UI have been introduced. They simply can model things and see that the things are generated and then provides actually with your application, so you can just and do the things. So Amplify relies on AppSync, which also relies on GraphQL. So all these kinds of things are supported. It's probably worth completely another talk. But what's really nice and what are really nice about this Amplify, that it also in CI/CD. So generally, it provides you really nearly manage CI/CD. So you write, so you model your dependencies, you will get a lot of for free, and you only have to say where is your Git repository. It can be manage Git, it may be even AWS managed code commit, it can be also other managed things are from Atlassian and so on, and then they will generate the whole pipelines for you with AWS native services like code build, code pipeline, and deploy this, and even configure main and so on. So it's, I see just another potential that you don't spend too much time on CI/CD. In many situations, it's just you see the code. There are the tests, and then just everything else can be generated by your cloud provider. So also very, very powerful, and just check it out. There is also, there is a serverless framework, like an alternative for writing serverless applications, and there is serverless framework components. I think it's commercial part, but they also provide you ready components so that you can reduce writing your infrastructure as a code and also relying on this. So if you're using serverless frameworks, so check this out. But generally, the last 15 minutes have been fully packed with all this stuff, but you see some general patterns. So direct service integrations to reduce the amount of code written. You have seen a lot of stuff like API gateway, HTTP API, step functions, event bridge, SNS, Amplify. All these different use cases provide you all these direct integrations that you can just can use the power of these tools. Another pattern is you see visual tools which help you reduce the cognitive load, like step function, Visual Studio, Amplify, admin UI, but also DynamoDB Workbench is one of the example, and also automated CI/CD focus on the business logic. We've seen this with Amplify, and I see the same. This is also the tool from AWS itself to build serverless application. They also go into the direction to ease your CI/CD process. So I think we have 15 minutes left, and as you see it, so this is what Werner Vogels told. So how the future of development will look like. So all the code you ever write is the business logic. It's very optimistic, and currently probably many will say it's not very realistic, but this is the direction and how AWS sees this, the whole ecosystem, especially the ecosystem of the serverless services. It's just how they develop them. It's just that you can focus on your business logic, and everything else is just have to be done. And of course you have limitations if you use something just which is already built in and not very highly configurable. You may lose some flexibility, but you will keep your focus on what matters. So generally, if you will use serverless ecosystem, It doesn't matter what cloud provider. Yeah, it will significantly lower your DNS and germane cognitive load, also the amount of code written, and also the amount of dependencies. So you just, yeah, you don't have to manage your execution runtime like GDK and so on, but also the web application server is also abstracted away behind API gateway and so on. So this is the important part. But of course, reducing dependencies doesn't mean that you own nothing. Yeah, you still own things, you own less, but you have to take care about things. So if you are using Lambda language, then you are selecting the runtime version, yeah, like Node.js, like Java 8, 11, and so on. And AWS retires them from time to time. They cannot manage them forever. So like we've got the message that Node.js below 10 will be retired completely, and also 8 time will be migrated from the Oracle GDK to the Amazon alternative, which is Coreto. So then you have to see if something breaks, and update this. And also the same stuff if you're using Aurora database, which is Postgres and MySQL compatible, will get the notice. Like, what if you are relying on Postgres with the version 9.6, then it won't be supported anymore, and it will be automatically upgraded to 12 if you just don't upgrade it to 10 or so, even to 12. So you have to take care, you have to plan upgrades, but of course it's just a bit less generally. I have the web application server in this context and so on, but still you have to own things. We have a bit of time, so I would like just to share something how to be successful with serverless in general, because there are a lot of caveats, and I think there are some things which are true also for other kind of microservices environments. So it's about software delivery and operational excellence. And when I'm talking about this, I always reference this wonderful book Accelerate from Nicole Forsgren, Jess Humble, Jim Keen, which has been released 3 years ago. I think that's the most fundamental book I have read about software. And what they're talking about is that there are four key metrics which combine speed and quality. For example, deployment frequency and lead time for changes. These are metrics for the speed and time to restore service and change failure rate. This is the metrics for quality. And what they say that the highly successful companies, they don't trade one for another. And if you are just in the high or elite group, then they can combine this. But the question is, how to combine this? And this is the focus on operational excellence, on the performance excellence. And just you see the red, that there are things that help. And just use cloud, the usage of cloud helps with delivery and operational performance. Of course, you see the code maintainability. They mean the same way we have been talking about evolutionability. And you see loosely coupled architecture. And serverless architects are very loosely coupled. So this is the key feature. Using all these services like event breach and so on, which allow you to write these things. And we have been talking how to minimize the code, amount of code being written, which helps you with manageability, so on and so on. So there are some best practices, and I see that using serverless will help you generally with all this approach. So probably I will skip part. There are some examples how can you do canary deployments with the serverless. You can look at this later, because doing this continuous deployment also helps you with time to restore, because you can just automatically roll back and so on. I will probably wrap up the talk with some kind of stuff. So serverless is kind of time shift. yeah, and all the paradigms, like the shift from relational to NoSQL databases, just you cannot use the old methods to be successful. Yeah, if you use relational data modeling in NoSQL stuff, probably it will fail, and it's just not because NoSQL database, yeah, doing something wrong, so you are using this wrongly. And the same is for serverless. So you have to embrace some best practices in order to be successful with this. And this is the last I would like to share. So the first one, what you need to be successful is just to adopt true DevOps. There is the links to the DevOps topologies below. They describe the patterns and anti-patterns using DevOps. This comes from the same people which wrote the book Team Topologies, which I have talked in the beginning. And mainly for the serverless, there is only one best practice, and this is fully shared ops responsibilities by the devs. So you have one team of people, and they are sharing the devs and the ops stuff. So you won't be successful if you just have kind of people only focusing on ops, or even decoupled ops in this context. So it may be the case that you, if you have some kind of monolithic application, then there may be a situation that you can be successful, but generally with the serverless, the devs should do the ops stuff, and then ops also need to do dev stuff. Complete infrastructure automation is probably true for all kind of cloud operations. So just if you can automate CI/CD, then you probably lose the time, or then simply use the service which provides CI/CD like Amplify. Chaos engineering is highly important because this is distributed application, and so also the things may break. You need to figure out how it just works, but many of serverless services, they just highly available, highly fault tolerant, but anyway, also Lambda fail, so they will be retried, and just you have to think about this. Also have to think about how to write the code which is idempotent in order to enable these retries and so on. So you need in dev responsibility in the teams, because it may be expensive. You have to allow developers think about money, so understand the price model of the services, and of course they need access to all this invoice stuff from AWS. If just simply decoupled and only your financial may look at this, so cost reduction may become a feature like security, like performance, and so on, because you also need to iterate. You choose the service, and then you see, okay, yeah, does it fit? Probably you have expand functions which you probably need to write in other programming language, yeah, which quicker, and so on. So you need to embrace this stuff. And what I really like with the serverless, each team, each developer in theory can have access to its own AWS test account. Yeah, so test account per developer, even per developer and feature is possible, because in the pay-as-you-go model, you're mainly paying for the storage being used, but in this staging test environment, you don't use too much. Of course, there are limitations. You cannot create unlimited accounts because of service quotas and so on, but generally it's possible. So you can, if you automate everything, then it'd be easier to test and just everybody has own account for testing. Also, what I see is only minimal local testing with this serverless, because it's very difficult to mimic serverless services on your local machine. So AWS gives you some possibilities, but you lose all the quotas and you lose some integration. You also lose identity and access management and so on. So this is for quick unit tests, functional tests, it's possible, but generally you can set up the whole environment with some delay. It may take several minutes, but you can do real testing on the staging environment. But many people also say, okay, this whole stuff with testing environment, it costs time and if you don't have a real user behavior there. So for some small tests, it's good, but for some stuff, people use a real live environments because it's just the state of your application. So also think about how to adopt testing in action, and it's providing some sandboxing there and so on. It's really interesting thing. So I recommend the link below the talk of Michael Brzezik, What Do You Know About Testing in Production. He also describes the challenges of staging environment and so on. So I think it was the last slide. Yeah, so thank you very much. I know that it was probably too much information, or going too quickly about too many topics. So I will share my slides, and now I'm open to questions. I see that Scotty also wrote that you can ask them. And anyway, I'm available also via Twitter, via email, and so on. So thank you very much for the invitation once again.